From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, my brother, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob, as we move cameras through the night.
Quite the critical zoom there, Count.
I didn't know. I got to get a little bit taller there, Bob. Bob, yes, back here. Another episode of Bob After Dark.
Yes. It's good to be here for another episode of Bob After Dark.
It's good to be anywhere.
It's our final episode of Bob After Dark.
You're really going to hit him with this news now.
Yeah. So, guys, Count Panic and I have decided that this is going to be the final episode of Bob After Dark as we know it.
Wow.
Count Panic and I aren't going anywhere.
No.
Starting next week, we'll be on our brand new format, which is going to be Bob's After Birds.
Bob's After Birds. And what's the show about?
Bird watching.
We're going to be bird watchers.
Yes. Count Panic and I will be bird watching every week.
Yeah.
And you guys, the fans, can kind of find out what kind of birds are flying into our area. At what given times?
I mean, vampire bats kind of already fit into that category, right? But are they technically? They're not really birds, though.
No.
They're marsupials, right?
Yuck, yuck, yuck. Happy April Fool's Day.
Oh, everybody. You tricked us, Bob.
Yes.
That would be kind of cool, though, to host a bird watching show. Lots of birds around here.
Bob's After Birds?
Yeah.
That's going to be our side show.
What's your favorite bird? That's a good question, actually.
Let me get back to that. So if this is your first time ever watching or listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, this is your show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course Count Panic's favorite bird to bird watch.
You just reversed the question.
I had to do that. Yeah,
well, listen, being in Indiana, I like the cardinal, right? And the cardinal is supposed to be symbolic. If you see a cardinal, that's supposed to be a loved one. So, you know what? Let's say the cardinal, because that's a wholesome bird right there.
That is actually my favorite, because that was my dad's favorite. What? Every time I see one, I think it's
your dad
coming to say hi to me.
Yeah. So let's lock in our votes.
Absolutely.
Cardinal.
Cardinal's a good answer.
Yeah.
Now, Count, we weren't together last week. Unfortunately, things happen.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So here we are now, and we're back to do the show, and we need a quick weekend update from Count Panic.
Bob, it's been we are in full spring. It's the spring of deception. It's April Fool's Day, and the biggest joke is I had to wear a winter coat on April 1st. But as is our natural settings here. Storms, of course. There's another storm predicted tomorrow, so the weather is always wacky. I don't know when I could fly anymore. Because it's cold one day, hot the next day. But this past weekend was relatively okay, Bob. I think, it was a low-paced weekend. And, they say March goes in like a lion, comes out like a lamb. But in this case, it went in like a lion and went out an even bigger lion, Bob.
Bigger? It's not that bad out.
It was winter coat, Bob. It was a winter coat.
I've been
day.
Wearing a hoodie all day, and I'm
Bob,
just
it's now it's the 30 degrees outside right now.
I'm sorry. I refuse to believe your reality, and I substitute my own.
You're making your own spring.
I am making my own spring. If I believe it, it'll happen.
Whether the weather cooperates or not.
Yes. I was at Anime Detour in Minneapolis, Minnesota this past weekend.
We're big there.
No, we're not. Oh. we have fans in Minnesota. The fans from Minnesota that are listening right now are like, come on, Bob, really? Yeah,
Minnesota.
We care and love about you, Minnesota.
Home of Prince. How far were you from Prince's house?
I could tell you I was closer to Mall of America than I was Prince's house.
All right. You didn't bathe yourselves in the water, or pure, was it? How's the saying? Yeah, purify yourselves in Lake Minnetonka or whatever it's called.
No.
No.
Oh.
How was it, though?
It was okay. Had a good time. Happy to be home before I leave for my next show on Friday, which is the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, as they say.
Now, I know for sure.
I know. We're big in Milwaukee.
I mean, yes. We've been to Milwaukee, and the fans are rabid.
Yes, you are absolutely correct.
I couldn't get out of the room, Bob. It was like the Beatles in the 60s. They were tearing at my cape and everything, Bob.
It's been a minute since we had a talk in Wisconsin. We need to make that change.
That's Milwaukee's a nice city.
I would say
beautiful.
So. It is a gorgeous
city. Mini Chicago, which they might think is an insult, but
they're not going to take it as an insult. They don't want to be as big as Chicago. No. But I love Milwaukee. It's one of my favorite cities to
visit. Wisconsin itself. I mean, let's talk about a state that's on a roll. They produce three fine things: chocolate, like fudge and whatnot, cheese,
which is number one,
above beer.
Yeah.
So you rank? It's for you. It's
cheese, beer, and then fudge.
I know cheese and they're all pretty.
I do love me a good beer. Don't get me wrong, but cheese is way more important.
Also, Milwaukee, the home of the Bronze Fonz.
Which we got to see.
Yeah.
Yes, we did. Anyway, count.
Yeah.
Do you know how Bob After Dark works?
Kinda. How does it work?
All right, so we split the show up in two parts. First part of the show is the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird and unusual news headlines. Anything from cryptids or ghosts being featured in major media headlines, lights in the sky being caught on cameras, or, of course, advances in science that borderline on science fiction. Mm. Count Panic's not prepared for any of these stories, and we get the Panic's take on all of them. I have one this week that might actually interest John as well. So
really?
I'm interested to see if John will call in during that story or not. But our phone number here during the air is 219-845-1100. Once again, that's 219-845-1100.
And it's the what we call cheese and the cheese and the fudge of the show, right? So the meat and potatoes?
I would say so.
The fudge is the news stories and the cheese is the main course.
All right. You ready for our first news story?
Yeah.
All right. This is the one I thought John would find interesting.
So if he's listening, he is.
This one's for you, John.
This one's for him.
So declassified CIA files suggest that the Ark of the Covenant may have actually been found.
Wow.
This is from uniladtech.com. I want to give a shout out to Scarecrow, who actually found this article.
The actual Scarecrow?
You know, Scarecrow knows who Scarecrow is.
Oh, nice.
This Coldness. Is written by Rebecca Jordan, and I've seen this across several different news outlets. This just happens to be the article that was sent to me first, so that's where I'm reading it from. The long-going mystery of the Ark of the Covenant may have been solved. According to the Bible, the Ark of the Covenant was built by Israelites shortly after they fled Egypt around the 13th century B.C., is said to hold the Ten Commandments, also supposedly able to melt Nazis' faces off. That's not actually in the article. That's just that's a side note. Indiana Jones. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. Some historians believe the Ark of the Covenant originally was kept inside the Holies of Hollies, the most sacred room in the Temple of Jerusalem, but before it disappeared in 586 BC. Others believe the Ark ended up in Ethiopia, where local tradition claims it's hidden in a church. No physical evidence has ever been confirmed, but now a declassified CIA document in the year 2000 says the agency may have found it back in 1988. In the 1970s and 1980s, the CIA employed individuals alleged to have paranormal capabilities as means to acquiring intelligence about distant events. Project Sunstreak was one of those remote viewing programs and used psychics to gather intelligence on places or objects' only coordinates. In a session held on December 5th, 1988, a remote viewer identified only as number 32 was given a target to identify, and what they saw was remarkable. Hmm. The target is a container. The container has a container inside of it, the document stated.
Container has a container.
The target is fashioned of wood, gold, red-acted, and is decorated with red-acted a six-winged angel. The remote viewer also said the object was shaped like a coffin and located somewhere in the Middle East where Arabic was being spoken. Although the psychic wasn't told where they were searching for the Ark of the Covenant, their descriptions closely matched historical depictions of the artifact. Biblical history notes that the sacred gold-covered wooden chest was constructed sometime around 1445 BC. The document added the target is hidden underground, dark and wet were all aspects of the location of the target. The purpose of the target is to bring people together. as something to do with ceremony, memory, homage, the resurrection. There is an aspect of spirituality, information, lessons, and historical knowledge far beyond what we know now. The viewer reported that the Ark was protected by entities that can only be opened now by those who are authorized to do so. This document is part of a large archive of material from the CIA psychic programs, which I will start doing some deep dives into since they're being declassified, and they are used in situations involved with finding hostages to tracking down missing criminals. But the story for the first big story is, did the American government find the Ark of the Covenant, or at least get an idea of where it's at? Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, you never know, Bob. I mean, this could be possible, or it could be someone they think is it. I mean, how do we really, I guess that's what testing is for, but how do we, stuff that goes back that far, Bob, that far, there's got to be some due diligence to make sure it's actually correct.
Yes. It'd be an interesting thing to hear if it was found. Any fan of Indiana Jones will tell you, not my cat, but any, cat. I mean, if any fan is my cat's listening, you know, Indiana Jones is a good cat. But no, a fan of the movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. Come on, man. That's a classic movie. You know, it melts the Nazis' faces off at the end. It's such a good movie. And I think it'd be interesting to if this is actually found, and if it's actually, if the psychics saying what they depicted is believing. So in 1988, did America find the Ark? And if they got an idea of where it's at, did anybody actually track it down? I believe we have a caller.
We do. I think we have a caller. I'm going to put it on and see.
Call, you're on the air.
Hey, are you taking me live, Bob?
I'm taking you live, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good, John. What's your take on the story?
Well, as always, I'm a firm believer on this, but I'm gonna hand you over to my wife because she's well aware of this. She's kind of, you know, sometimes she hears a lot of stuff that I don't hear. So I'm gonna give the phone to her, and she's gonna tell you what she thinks.
Right. Sounds good. We'd love to hear it.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Doing good, ma'am. How about yourself?
Okay. You know, I heard about that Ark of the Covenant being hidden under near the Dome of the Rock in Israel, in Jerusalem. And that was supposedly, there was an explorer, like an Indiana Jones type man. His name was Ron Wyatt back in the 80s. And he used to look for all these Bible sites, Noah's Ark, the Ark of the Covenant, might have been a couple other things. And he went down below, and he took pictures of the Ark of the Covenant. And he said, but he didn't dare touch it because he said it was too powerful. And he said, you know, like going back to what you said about the CIA saying that it was being protected by entities. Well, Ron Wyatt said that there were angels down there. Those are the entities that are protecting the Ark of the Covenant. So Ron Wyatt passed away quite a while back. He had cancer. But it's very interesting what the CIA got coming out now about it, you know.
Right.
And there's other stories that there was another story that the Ark of the Covenant was in Africa, and it's supposedly protected by these people. And it's funny because they got like, I don't know, I'm not sure what the man is, if he's a bishop or a priest or it's some kind of African church. And he is the keeper of the Ark of the Covenant. And he doesn't allow anybody else to see that Ark of the Covenant. So nobody really knows what, you know, nobody ever set their eyes on it except for this one man. But I never really believed that because I really believe the Ark of the Covenant is where Ron Wyatt said it was in Jerusalem. So, you know, I mean, it's just amazing because, see, where Jesus was crucified, when he was dying, they said that his blood dripped down to the ground and it went into the ground. And it's supposed to have, his blood was supposed to have dripped on the Ark of the Covenant down below. So supposedly, I don't know if it's true or not, but there was like some kind of samples of the blood was taken off of there. I don't know who did it. I don't know, because, you know, you read so many things. And it was said that the blood was supposed to have been half human and half unknown. In other words, the DNA came from his mother, Mary.
Right.
And the unknown came from God.
Of course.
So, but that's my story. I don't know.
Of course. No, and that's fair. It's appreciative of hearing all of that stuff over the years. I know there has been several people that have claimed that they've had the Ark, just like over the years, several people have claimed that they've had bits of the crucifix that Christ was, you know, crucified on. I've heard different tales from different things over the years. What I find interesting is that the CIA supposedly might have tracked down, at least triangulated the location in the Middle East. Whether or not it ends up in Ethiopia, we don't know. Heck, we don't even know if it might end up in a warehouse here in America somewhere buried deep underground. We don't know. But I appreciate you guys calling in.
And the same thing with the crown of thorns that he wore. They're saying that it's somewhere in a church in Europe. I don't know. You know, I where exactly it's at, I don't know. But supposedly all these things that had to do with the crucifixion, like you say, the cross and the crown of thorns and all. It's you know, they're like called relics, I guess you would say, you know.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. All right, Bob. Well, I'll let you go.
Thank you.
No, of course. Yeah. We appreciate that.
Put John back on for a second there.
Okay.
Yeah, see, Bob, I mean, I had to have my expert.
No, and I appreciate that. It's awesome to know.
But he was asking me earlier today, Bob, if you're afraid of clowns.
Clowns don't bother me.
Clowns don't bother him.
No.
Dolls
bother me, John. Clown dolls bother me.
The only reason I was asking, because I came across an article in the Times Sunday. Apparently there's a clown museum in Portage.
I didn't know that.
I worked in Portage for years and didn't know there was a clown museum.
Oh, yeah, let me read you the article real quick.
Sure, so this clown, clowns. I don't know.
So this guy writes on the Sunday papers of businesses, restaurants, museums, whatever, that are closing and things that are opening, you know, to let the people in the region know what's going on. So this one says closed. The Clown House, a haunted house in Portage, terrified its last fright seekers last Halloween. The clown-themed haunted house at 2813 Oakwood Street announced last week it was closing for good. It featured live actors, hearses, and, of course, evil clowns. The owner said they were closing the haunted house because of complaints on social media. Clown house is done permanently in Portage at our house, the owner said, posted on social media. We might be helping out with haunted house in towns with other organizations and are wanting for them to get their okay. So those that love us can still come out and come out there and see your favorite clowns.
Wow. There you have the clowns have to find somewhere else, I guess.
Send in the clowns.
So there you go. There was a clown house in Portage, and because of social media complaints, there no longer is a clown house in Portage.
That happens, I guess.
I wasn't sure about you and clowns. I knew, you know, the. your thing behind the dolls. So
yeah, no, clowns don't bother me so much, but I will tell you, I don't like dolls, John.
But I thought that was an interesting story because, you know, like I said, I never heard of it either. And I don't know. You know, you would think you would know there's a clown house in the area, but well, apparently a lot of people, you know, were against it because it was, you know, talked about a lot on social media, so they had to close it down. So I don't know whether they were complaints or what, but so I figured, you know, you're always reading the articles. I figured, well, I'll read you an article today too, see what happens. So.
Well, thanks, John. I appreciate that. It's unfortunate to hear another haunted house close because we just lost. We're running out of them. Colin, me and you are going to run a haunted house this year.
Dollhouse.
It'll just be me and you. People just walk in. It's just me and you standing in a room being like, yeah, no, there's no dipping sauces for your cheese.
Well, throw me in there too, Bob. So.
Sounds good, John. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right. Have a good evening. I'll see you later.
You too. Have a good one, John.
It's going to be the scariest thing that you don't have dipping sauce for your cheese curds.
That's just standing there with this plate of cheese curds. Like, yeah, there is no marinara. There's no ranch.
Nothing.
You just got to eat these dry.
Terrible.
That's our haunted house. And here, you don't want a Dr. Pepper to drink. Here's a cold glass of water.
Yeah, warm glass.
Oh, my goodness. All right. You ready to move on to our next story?
Sure.
Child complains of – this one comes to us from Houston, the Houston Channel 2. I think it's their NBC affiliate down there. Child complains of monster under the bed, but then babysitter comes face to face with a man hiding there.
Really?
Yep. And this was written by Heather Hollingsworth of the Associated Press. A babysitter looked under a bed to reassure a worried child that there wasn't a monster there and came face to face with the man who wasn't supposed to be there. A sheriff's officer in Kansas said in a news release, the 27-year-old was booked in jail this week after a struggle with the babysitter that knocked the child to the ground. The Barton County Sheriff's Office said deputies were called late Monday to the home near Great Bend, a city around 15,000 people in the western part of the state. The suspect was gone before they arrived, but the babysitter told them the child had been complaining about a monster before she found the suspect. The man once lived in the home, but there was a protection from abuse. Excuse me. The man once lived in the home, but that there was a protection form abuse order issued against him to stay away from the property. The sheriff said that was a mouthful. Deputies searched but were unable to find the man until the next day when he was captured after a foot chase, the news released. Online court records show that the man had been posted bond about 10 days earlier after he was charged with a criminal threat, domestic battery, and violating a protection order from a protection form abuse order. Those allegations were alleged to have occurred in January and February. But following this late arrest, a judge ordered him jailed without bond. The sheriff's office said additional requested charges include aggravated burglary, aggravated battery, and child endangerment. Mm. So, monster under the bed turned out to be an actual monster under the bed. Hashtag panic state.
Yeah, that's kind of a worse, isn't it, Bob? Well, luckily, you know, they got this guy here. But that's the thing. You hear about these crazy stories. It could be paranormal, but in fact, it's a real human being terrorizing you.
Yep, and this was definitely a cryptid story there, Kyle Panic.
Yeah.
Or not cryptid story, but a cryptic story.
Cryptic.
You always hear the old trope when it comes to babysitters. The caller's coming from inside the house.
You know
that trope in horror movies?
Yeah, it's a classic.
A classic trope in a horror film. But anywho, you ready to move on to our last news article?
Yeah.
This story comes to us from The Mirror over across the pond, written by Rob Correll. Mysterious images of Bigfoot caught lurking in National Weather Service image after Pennsylvania storms. Few myths have set off wild imaginations as the fabled Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Now, meteorologists in Pennsylvania say they observed a figure resembling Bigfoot while conducting a survey in an aftermath of a recent storm. The mysterious creature was spotted beyond a fallen tree and nestled within the hills and the higher terrain of the Allegheny Mountains in Fayette County, Pennsylvania, according to a Fox News report. A photograph was taken near Messmore Road, captured a potential Bigfoot lurking in the background. While many sneer at the possibility of existence of such phenomena, there is a well-documented history of sightings that go back across the century. Across North America, many Native American tribes tell of large, hairy beings inhabiting the forest and often are seen as protectors or warnings. Many historical reports of similar-sized entities in the region where this recent one was located indicate that the area could be a hotbed of activity due to Sasquatch sightings. The Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization notes that Pennsylvania is often claimed to be popular stomping ground for sightings of Bigfoot, ranking the state in the top 10 of most number of reports. According to the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, almost 50 years ago, in 1977, the family drove along the dark stretch of nearby roadway when they spotted a 6-foot-tall figure covered in shaggy reddish-brown hair. When they shined their car headlights at it, the creature reportedly disappeared over a 40-foot embankment, never to be seen again. Reports of this being's height vary. In 2004, nearby Green County, two friends clocked it at 7 feet tall when they spotted something apparently making cat-like noises while they were taking part on a bike ride. 9 years later, a man reported one even taller after claiming he saw a figure with a caveman-like features standing around 8 foot tall off in the distance. Modern sightings have some degree been captured in videos or photos, fueling ongoing conversation about the existence of these giants. Residents in the area of this latest sighting said it's rather common for people to create figures out of iron or other similar materials, either for decoration and to spark curiosity from the public. A National Weather Service meteorologist moved to calm the citizens of the area. They said there's no such need to worry, as what was spotted was likely something purposely staged to add a bit of fun to people's lives. Hashtag panic stage.
Yeah, Bob. I mean, if it was to add fun, I guess that's one way to add some fun. But you know, this raises the question. I mean, I always wondered, Bob, where do Bigfoot actually sleep? You know, do they just lay on the forest ground? Do they have little huts? They're roaming out there. We know that for sure.
I am a big believer in...
They have houses?
I'm a big believer in the Bigfoot. You know this.
Where do they stay, Bob?
In the woods.
Yeah, but do they have a little hut?
Remember, we just had the guy on the other week, the Bigfoot hunter.
Yeah, but I should ask that question.
They dive in and out of reality.
Yeah, that's one. I mean, that's one way. That's one take.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of take count, you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, for our live fans, stick around. We'll be right back. And for our podcast fans, stay tuned. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, Very Nice for Evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
I'm folklorist and author Mark Muncy.
And I'm author Erica Lance.
And we host Eerie Travels.
It's a podcast where we discuss all things strange and unusual.
We discuss everything from Bigfoot to UFOs.
From Mothman to haunted locations.
From hidden history to legendary beasts.
From Cocaine Bear to the Jersey Devil.
From holler monsters to conspiracy theory.
We interview amazing guests that are actual investigators into the things that many believe to only be in the world of the imagination.
We also get into verbal debates about which monsters would win in a fight.
If any of this sounds interesting to you, then join us twice a week on your favorite podcast platform.
So look for Eerie Travels, and we'll see you on the other side.
And welcome back. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey, Bob.
What'd you do during break?
During break, Bob, I tried to save all the clowns from that clown house that closed down in Portage.
Ah.
Try to gather them up in one little car. Rescue them and take them to somewhere else.
Were you trying to raise a clown army?
That'd be cool to have, wouldn't it?
Just a clown army.
Clown army. What'd you do, Bob?
You know, Count, I took up a new hobby.
Again?
Yeah, I took up a new hobby.
Take up a lot of hobbies.
I you know, it's a necessary
man
thing
of the world.
Man of my age, you know, you gotta do
stature.
It. I took up pickleball during our break.
Pickleball, Bob.
Pickleball. I become number one NA. In pickleball.
John is actually taking a pickleball too. Maybe he could play you.
John.
I dabble in pickleball
you
as well.
You dabble. I dabble. It's unfair. You're a vampire. You have powers.
I wish I could use them more effectively in pickleball, but wow, Bob. And you said you're all a pro now.
Just yeah, number one NA.
Wow. I can't wait to watch.
Yeah. I developed my own pickleball swinging move called the scrambled egg.
Did you?
Yeah, and it's pretty gnarly. It's unstoppable.
You want to show us?
No, you have to play me to find
okay, it. Okay, well, we'll go to the court after this.
Play in the dark?
I have the advantage then.
All right, Count.
Yeah.
You ready to dive into what is today's topic?
What is today's topic?
All right, so rip straight from the diaries of Dr. Ben Vanderson, I present to you the lore of the week. This is the potatoes, or no, this is the meat of the episode.
Cheese.
The cheese of the episode. The news of the week is the potatoes. This is the meat of the episode. And today, as we are recording this episode, it is April 1st.
April Fool's Day
is when we're recording this.
People got tricked.
People got tricked. They thought we were starting a bird watching show.
Which could be a possibility.
So I have here a list of 5 known hoaxes in the cryptozoology world.
These are hoaxes.
Yes.
So these are.
There is an omission of one that people are going to be like, why haven't you talked about it? Because it deserves its own episode, and I'm expecting a guest on for that one.
Okay.
So, no, there is no talk of the Wisconsin hodag in this episode.
We need an expert for that one.
And I have an expert for the hodag episode.
There we go.
That I could promise you. So I have 5 different ones this week that are all 1,000% hoaxes. These are
debunked.
Debunked. Fooey.
Fooey and hooey.
But they're fun reads. It's fun listening to it. And sometimes it's nice to do something just a little different.
Don't be fooled, though.
Don't be fooled by the cryptids I got. I'm still Bob from the podcast.
From the block.
You know where I came from? Whiting.
Yeah. Had a little. Now you have a lot.
Now, I still don't have a lot. I started with a little. Now I got a little more, I guess.
A little bit more.
All right. So this first one I want to talk about is the Doggigator.
The Doggigator.
The Doggigator. Doggigator.
I know where this is going here.
Doggigator. The Doggigator is a river cryptid that has the appearance of a hybrid of an alligator and a dog.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I mean, it could be seen in the Abita Mystery House and also the Anita Mystery House, which I have a variety of cryptids. They're hokey tourist traps, guys. I love them. That's for me to stop at. Hmm. One of them is the Doggigator, baptized as Daryl, and the scaly pooch has its own house and food dish and surrounded by plants. But guess what, Count Panic?
What's that?
Daryl's fake.
Just not a real thing.
Daryl was confirmed a hoax. It was just a statue. Nothing is known about the biology and the habitat of the reptomammalian hybrid, which is also happens in other cryptids like the Cougator, like the Bassigator, and sometimes considered a fearsome critter. If it was real, it would probably be a survivor of extinct crocodiles in which one would stand upright like that. But no, Daryl the Doggigator is 100% a fake cryptid.
Man, it's too bad, because that sounds like one I could get behind, Bob. That sounds like a cool one. Doggigator.
The Doggigator.
It's sad to see it's debunked.
Yeah. Fake. Some people are like, how come you don't do more episodes about cryptids? Well, let me tell you, man.
A lot of fake
you
ones.
Get, well, depending on who you talk to, cough, cough, Pat from Ghostly Podcast, cough, cough, everything I talk about is hooey, right?
Yeah.
But no, what I'm getting at here, though, is sometimes these stories have like 5 sentences to them. How am I can't do an entire episode about the Doggigator because, all right, guys, it sits at a museum.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
How can you defeat the Doggigator? Would you want to defeat the Doggigator?
No, friendly. I'm going to take it as a pet.
Yeah. Train it.
All right. You ready to move on?
Sure. Start off strong, though.
Yeah, I figured I'd pick the shortest one to start. So this next one comes to us from New Zealand. It is the Ziumaru carcass. Ziumaru. We're going to call it the ZM creature, okay?
Right.
The ZM carcass is a hoax that was believed to be the corpse of a sea monster. The remains of this horrific-looking sea creature were caught in 1977 off the east coast of New Zealand by a Japanese fishing trawler named Zairu Maru. The creature's strange and frankly terrifying appearance confused many, which led people to believe that it was the remains of a feliosaur. The feliosaur, for those who don't know, is an aquatic prehistoric reptile, which some believe is related to Nessie, or in the species that Nessie belongs to. Nessie. Yeah, Nessie reference.
She's here. A fan of the
but
show.
But Nessie is not a hoax.
No.
Now, of course, and Nessie's not the hoax.
No.
But the Zairu Maru carcass definitely
that's
is. That's a hoax.
Nessie knockoff.
Yes. However, after later testing of the specimen's tissue remains, it was discovered that the remains were likely not of a prehistoric sea horror, but rather a decomposing corpse of a basking shark or similar species. The discovery specimen, that came out bad. My apologies, guys. That I was trying to surpass that yawn for the past half hour.
This was not impressing you.
No, I am so sorry, everybody. I was suppressing that yawn, and it just kind of came out. The discovery
is after dark. Y'all get sleepy.
Give me a nightcap and a gown. You know what I'm talking about. All right. So the discovery of the specimen was what began on April 25th, 1977. Sailing 30 miles east of Christchurch, New Zealand, was Japanese trawler Zairu Maru. However, what should have been smooth sailing for the people on board quickly went sideways when the boat's towel caught something unusual, something enormous, something rotting. The towel had caught the now legendary ZM carcass, and needless to say, the crew were shocked. They were convinced, no, believed, that the strange specimen was a previously undiscovered and unidentified animal. Despite the potential biological breakthrough, though, the captain of the trawler, Akira Tanaka, thought, screw this, and decided to dump the decomposing carcass into the ocean again. I need to point something out real quick.
Yeah.
This is the smartest person we have ever discussed on the show ever. Pulls up this disgusting rotting carcass that may or may not be like zombie fish.
Yeah.
Put it back.
Put it right back.
Put it right back.
Why would you mess with that?
Tanaka. Oh. Akira Tanaka has none of that. Sees this thing get pulled up, potential big scientific breakthrough or apocalyptic creature. And it's like, you know what? I've seen Godzilla. Just let's dump it back in the
dump
water.
Dump it back, yeah. I mean, that's smart.
I love that. Apparently, he did not want to risk spoiling the fish they caught that day. However, before the horrendous act that the captain took place, though, the crew scrambled to get some photos and sketches of the creature, who they nicknamed Nessie. Well, that's not fair. That's already taken a name from somebody else. Measurements were also taken, and then some samples of the creature, which included parts of the skeleton, skin, and fins, and were collected by further analysis by experts back in Japan. The result of that discovery is what only could be described as a feliosaur craze in Japan. For one, the shipping company ordered all of its boats to try and find the dump corpse. Unfortunately, however, there was apparently no success. There was probably a demand for some cute feliosaur merchandise, though. Hmm. Now, while greatly insisted that the carcass was, quote, not a fish, whale, or any other mammal, scientists weren't convinced. By comparing the number of sets of amino acids in the muscle tissue of the samples gathered, the analysis led to the conclusion that the carcass belonged to a dead basking shark. Yeah. As biology death fear for the species goes, decomposing basking shark carcasses lose most of its lower head area and the dorsal and caudal fins first, making them resemble a plesiosaur. Reportedly, the corpse was a foul-smelling, decomposing, and totally dead. Also reported were its height and weight, the former of which was 13 meters long, and the latter, which was about 1,800 kilograms, or for us, it's 42.7 feet and 2,204.6 pounds. According to the crew, the creature had 1 meter long neck, roughly about 4.9 feet, four large reddish fins and a tail about 2 meters long. No internal organs remain, but the flesh of the fat somewhat intact. Despite unconfirmed identification, the ZM carcass continues to intrigue scientists and enthusiasts alike due to its rarity and unusual circumstances. Its discovery brought attention to vast diversity yet explored in Earth's oceans and reminded humanity of the countless secrets that lie beneath the surface. It also highlighted the importance of preserving marine ecosystems and conducting further research to shed the light on the parts that still captivate our imaginations. Hashtag Panic's take on the Zeomarto creature.
Well, it's great that, I mean, it was smart that person to throw it back, but really in reality, nothing to worry about. Nothing supernatural or cryptid-like about it. Just a plain old fish.
Yes.
Nothing to worry about, Bob.
The heck was that? Did you hear that?
Knock a knock?
It sounded like something just climbed up on the roof.
The wind knocking around.
All right. You ready for our next one?
What's that?
The giant rooster.
Giant rooster.
Giant rooster.
That's a cryptid.
The giant rooster is not a distinct species, but rather a mutant, oversized version of the common rooster. It's not clear what makes them so big and large. Maybe it's the food they eat or something in the air. Maybe it's radiation. Whatever the reason, giant roosters have become a frequent subject of photographs from beginning of the 20th century onward. Many of these photographs have been sent as postcards. Hmm. During the drought of the years of the Great Depression, Midwestern farmers seemed to enjoy sending postcards of giant roosters and other giant-sized livestock and produce to their friends and relatives back east. These postcards were frequently captioned, "They grow them big here." Hmm. But these are hoaxes.
Just hoax.
Yes, the largest breed of chicken is the Jersey Giant, which is black in color and the first bred in early 1800s and weighs about 15 pounds and 2 feet tall. And they use their egg and meat producers, even though they only are about 10,000 around today. Hmm. But the giant roosters that these guys would take their pictures with for these postcards, and they're, you know, the size of a human. They're just artwork. Meant for laughs.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I mean, you see these videos of these giant birds and whatnot, and some are actually real, but this giant rooster is, in fact, a fraud.
Yes.
Yeah. So, debunked.
Debunked. Oh. Well, these are all debunked. These are all 100% all hoaxes.
Everyone.
All right. So, the next one I want to talk about is the Cardiff Giant. Hmm. The Cardiff Giant is a 10-foot-tall purported petrified man uncovered on October 16, 1869 by workers digging a well behind the barn of William C. Stubb Newell in Cardiff, New York. However, it was realized that it was a hoax created by the New York tobaccoist named George Hull. Being an atheist, Hull decided to create the giant after an argument with a fundamentalist minister named Mr. Turk about a passage in Genesis that stated that there were giants who once lived on Earth. The idea of a petrified man did not originate with Hull, however. In 1858, the newspaper Alta California had published a bogus letter claiming that a prospector had been petrified when he drank a liquid within a geode. So other newspapers had published stories of supposedly petrified people. George Hull hired men to carve out a 10-foot-long, 40.5-inch block of gypsum in Fort Dodge, Iowa, telling them it was intended for a monument of Abraham Lincoln in New York. He had shipped the block to Chicago, where he hired a German stonecutter to carve into it the likeness of a man and made him swear to secrecy. Various stains and acid were used on the giant to make the giant to be old and weather beaten, and the giant's surface was beaten with steel knitting needles embedded in board to stimulate pores. While the giant had been buried for a year, Newell hired two men, Gideon Emmons and Henry Nichols, to dig a well. When they found the giant, one of them has been attributed saying, "I declare, some old giant man is buried here." Hmm. Newell set up the tent over the giant and charged 25 cents for people who wanted to see it. 2 days later, he increased the price to 50 cents. The giant crowds that showman B.T. Barnum offered $60,000 for a 3-month lease on it. In his memoirs, he said he wanted to buy it. When the syndicate turned him down, he hired a man to covertly model the giant's shape in wax and create a plaster replica. He put it on display in New York, claiming that it was the real giant of, and the giant Cardiff was fake. On February 2nd, 1870, both giants were revealed as fake in court. The judge ruled that Barnum could not be sued for calling a fake giant fake. The Cardiff giant appeared in the 1901 Pan American Exposition, but not attract that much attention. An Iowa publisher bought it later to adorn his basement rumpus room as a coffee table and a conversation piece. In 1947, he sold it to the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, New York, where it's still on display to this day. Mm. The owner of Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum, a coin-operated game arcade and museum in Farmington Hills, Michigan, claims that the replica they display is the Barnum's replica. So both replicas of the giant, one's in Cooperstown.
Yeah.
And the other one is at Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum.
We gotta go there.
We do. So, what do you think of the giant?
Yeah, I mean, giants are kind of tough to. I mean, there's lots of lore about giants out there, right, Bob? But this one,
yes,
again, a phony giant, proven pretty quickly, I would say. And it is a bunch of hooey.
Bunch of hooey, yeah. Says. All right, you ready for our last one?
Yeah.
This one's about the Fiji mermaid.
The Fiji mermaid.
Yes, the Fiji mermaid was presented as this mummified body of a creature that's supposedly half mammal, half fish, and a version of traditional mermaid stories. Mermaids have been at shows for centuries, though these were often dugongs or people afflicted with sirenomelia. During the Renaissance and Baroque eras, the remains of mermaids were a staple of cabinets of curiosities. However, the exhibit created the Fiji mermaid concept was popularized by P.T. Barnum, but has since been copied many times in other attractions, including the collection of Robert Ripley. The original exhibit was shown around the United States, but was lost in the 1860s when Barnum's museum caught fire. The exhibit has since been acquired by Harvard's University's Peabody Museum of Archaeology and Ethnology, is currently housed in the museum's attic storage area. The Fiji mermaid came into Barnum's possession via his Boston counterpart Moses Kimball, who brought down to Barnum in the late spring of 1842. On June 18th, Barnum and Kimball entered into a written agreement to exploit this curiosity supposed to be a mermaid. Kimball would remain the creature's sole owner, and Barnum would lease it for about $12.50 a week. And Barnum's cherished his artifact, the Fiji mermaid. In Barnum's exhibit, the creature was allegedly caught in 1842 by a Dr. J. Griffin. Griffin was actually Levi Lyman, one of Barnum's close associates. Though many people believe Barnum's claim, the Fiji mermaid was actually the torso and head of a baby monkey sewn on the half of a fish and covered in paper mache. And the Fiji mermaid's been featured in popular media, like in Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses, in The X-Files, the episode Humbug depicts the possibility of series of sideshow murders and committed by a Fiji mermaid. And of course, there is the great mermaid documentary on Animal Planet that ended up becoming one giant lie.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Well.
So those are 5 hoaxes for you guys on April Fool's Day.
The mermaid one too had some traction out there. I mean, we're heavy hitters, right? The Ripley as well. I mean, you believe it or not, but for this one, I guess we all could say we don't believe it because it's fake.
Yes.
Fraud.
Phooey.
Phooey. Hooey. Phony.
So, Count, what do you think of all of them the or hoaxes.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice thing to kind of think about and believe in, although we know they are fake. Still wish that Dog-a-gator? I still wish when that one was real, though. Bob, I could get behind that one, I think.
Absolutely.
Train it.
And folks, to everybody else listening at home, I hope the next couple hours of your April Fool's Day brings you no more jokes.
Don't fall for anything anymore.
Bob After Dark is not ending. 100 more years. Do we have
something? No, I just to make sure the computer didn't fall asleep.
Oh, I got you. 100 more years of Bob After Dark, I promise.
100 more years, Bob.
100 more
How
years.
How old will you be in 100 years?
134.
Wow.
I'll be long gone. But you'll still be here hosting with, you know, a new Bob.
Cyborg Bob.
Oh, hey there. Boop, boop, boop.
Bob the Borg.
Yes. So, folks, I just want to say thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish all of you sweet dreams. To my mom, good night. To my dad, wherever you are in the universe, 3 years later, I miss and love you 100%. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.